Okay. So what I'm going to talk about here this morning is it's off. Can you hear me? It's on, yeah. No, no. Can I use yours? Ready? Hello? Is that working now? Microphone.
I know.
Working? Okay. Ah, my fault. Okay. So what we're going to talk about today is SQL Server Overview and then Master Data Services with BizTalk. I spent most of my time in Microsoft focusing just on BizTalk, and then about a year and a half ago, I started spending a lot more time with SQL Server. Internally, our division merged, and I was given the opportunity to run the SQL Customer Lab in Redmond. And really, I went on an interesting journey there, learning much more about SQL Server, the internals of that. One thing that I've spent a lot of time in the new release in SQL 2008 R2 is Master Data Services. The Master Data Services team came to me about a year ago and said, hey, we've developed this product, it's a single source of truth, you know, we want to look at how we can integrate that with some of our customers, etc., etc. So what I'm going to do is talk through how Master Data Services and BizTalk can play together. And that was really, like Richard said, that was really the reason why we started the book, so that we could actually look at some of these scenarios as well. So we're going to try and, if you keep counting, our aim is to get to 100 times that you see this slide. So we even have different variations of it as well. This one is slightly different. It's Chapter 5, SQL Primer. If you look now at what SQL Server provides in the SQL Server 2008 R2 timeframe, we really have the on-premise solution, which is SQL 2008 R2. We have the Parallel Data Warehouse, which is a separate edition, which is in final preview mode. And we also have SQL Azure. And what you'll see is that over the next few releases, we start to continue on this journey where you have like the traditional on-premise scale-up option. You have management layer over the top of it. If you need to parallelize your data warehouse workload, we'll continue to invest in that. But over time, we'll start to onboard more and more features into SQL Azure. Right now, we only have OLTP scenarios in there, but over the release schedule, there is a plan, you know, to do that. And that's really taking us on a vision where we can really have the same workload running on-premise and then run it in the cloud as well. And Richard will talk about more about that when he does the Windows Azure overview session. I wanted to give you some statistics on SQL Server and talk to you about some of the customers. And these are all customers that either myself or my team have worked with. And really, the key point here is that SQL Server does scale. When we look at what's the largest single database that we have on a single server, it's 80 terabytes. When we look at the largest single table that we have, it's 20 terabytes. When we look at the biggest total data that one customer has, it's over 2.5 petabytes. MySpace has over 1 petabyte. When we look at the highest database transactions per second, it's 36,000 at peak load. And that's one of our online gaming customers that we have. In terms of I/O subsystem that serve from a single SQL server, we have 18 gigabytes per second. To put that in perspective for you, when you look at a traditional spinning media that you have, a traditional hard drive will do about 200 IOs. So IO read or write requests per second. Typically that's measured at an 8K level. When you think about 18 gigabyte, that's a lot of single drives that we need to provide. This is using direct attached storage. In terms of the fastest data load speed that we've had, Thomas, who you will see at the end of the month, has been able to do 1 terabyte in 20 minutes. And the largest single cube that we have that we've worked with is 4.2 terabytes. So I guess the key message is today, with your customers, you can scale SQL Server, and this can touch most of the scenarios that we've ever seen. So upping the limits, we're obviously going to continue to invest in this, and this is something that I personally spend a lot of my time on, is the performance aspect of things. Before 2008 R2, Windows was limited to 64 CPUs. And with Windows Server 2008 R2, we now have that limit at 1,024 cores. And in order to encompass that, we have kernel groups. I think they may need to make some changes to Task Manager as well, you can imagine. So SQL Server generally follows suit, but for this release, we need to test and verify that we have a 1.6 scaling factor for all of our components. So the limit for this release was 256 CPUs. So the largest x64 machine that we've seen is 128 cores. We do have a preview machine that we're working on right now in Redmond, which is 256 CPUs. And the largest Itanium platform is 256 hyper-threaded, so that's 128 cores. With the Nehalem EX processor, which Intel have released, we're going to see lots more investments in the x64 platform. I was just a few weeks ago working with a large customer who had a 64-core hyper-threaded server. And the cost now that they can get that at is an order of magnitude less than they could previously on the Itanium platform. So with this trend, the increasing number of CPU cores, the platform's ability to actually adopt that and support those and scale with that, and then being readily available to customers on x64 at a reasonable price, you know, this is something that I think everyone in this room needs to start being aware of, you know, today. So we'll talk through some of the, over the next few days, we'll talk through some of the issues that you can see with that, and at the end of the month, we'll spend most of the time actually talking about those scaling issues that you have. So when we look at the SQL 2008 R2 release, and if we look at the coverage of the release, what are the main investments that have been made? Master Data Services is a single source of truth. I'm going to drill down into that in a few slides' time, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that today. Stream Insight is something that Richard is going to cover. This is complex event processing. As he said, this opens new scenarios and is something that we're very excited about in the release. When we look at app and multi-server management, there is the Synthesis, now known as SQL Server Control Point, which allows you to manage multiple servers, really get an idea of, you know, what is my CPU utilization, what are the response times that I'm seeing, those type of things. And as we see more and more customers having more and more SQL servers to manage, this becomes more and more important for us, and we are continuing to invest in that. There was a lot of improvements on Report Builder in reporting services, and there was also improvements on the Power Pivot, which is a key thing for the release. So when we look at optimizing resources, we could see the situation today where we need to reduce or eliminate server sprawl. We need to reduce the cost and complexity, and there's a continuous demand for 24/7. So SQL Server continues to invest in making ourselves highly available on traditional bare metal if you want to scale up. We have continued investment in clustering technology. We support up to 16 nodes in a cluster, etc. So with SQL Server 2008 R2 and Windows 2008 R2, there have been continued investments in Hyper-V. Hyper-V is something that I first started working with during the beta timeframe for the original Windows 2008 release. And this product has continued to evolve. One nice feature, which is supported now for SQL 2008 R2, is live migration. And I just wanted to actually bring that up and highlight that to you guys. If we look at how that actually works, if we have a machine which is running, virtual machine, running SQL Server, and we have it on a single cluster, with Windows Server 2008 R2, the concept of shared cluster volumes was introduced. Previously, a cluster volume could only be visible to one machine at any one time, but now in this release, it can actually be visible to two nodes. at the same time. What this means is that if we need to fail over a machine, so let's take, for instance, the scenario where we have cluster node 1 running, and we want to actually patch the underlying operating system. We need to apply some type of a critical patch. Previously, that would have meant we had to shut down the virtual machine. We needed to spin it up on another node. There would have been some element of downtime associated with it, or we needed to fail it over. If you're using traditional clustering with SQL Server, you'd need to fail over the SQL service, and that would incur whatever the restart time was on the second node for the SQL Server service, and that would depend on what your recovery interval was set to, etc. With the shared cluster volumes and live migration, because with the other server can read the disk, it can actually load that server up in memory, and it can actually do a live migration. When we say live migration, the migration occurs in such a small amount of time that it occurs within the TCP timeout period. So the actual move from one server to another is actually transparent to the actual clients that we have. So this is a very powerful feature, and this is something where we see the agility of the cloud is not something that's just in the cloud, it's actually something that's on-premise as well. And a lot of customers actually now talk about the concept of a public and a private cloud. And when we think of investment in virtualization technologies and utilizing management and building self-healing capabilities into the platform so that if my server fails, it fails over to another node seamlessly, I can rebuild the hardware, these type of things, that's something that Microsoft continues to invest in. And live migration is a key example of that. Okay. So these are the pretty diagrams we have. So what I want to spend the rest of the time focusing on is really master data. When I looked at this session, Richard published it online before telling me about it, which was nice. I really looked at where can we spend the time in this session. SQL Server is such a huge product, and I really wanted to focus on this feature, which I've spent a lot of time with, so I can give you an insight into what it's used for. And I know many of you are actually familiar with BizTalk Server and spend a lot of time with that, and MDS has a nice natural play there. When we look at an organization and at any particular system, there are two types of data typically that we classify it as. We classify it as transactional data, and then we classify master data. If we take a payment system or an online banking system, transactional data I would classify as if I go to the ATM and I withdraw some money from my account, that is a transactional data that's related to my checking account, right? That should absolutely be stored in the local database for that application. What we found over time is that many people also need to manage the metadata or the nouns that are associated with the customer or the product that they're dealing with. So for instance, if I am a customer of Royal Bank of Scotland or of NatWest or of Scandia or of one of the other financial institutions, they probably want to know across all their systems if I move house. They want to carry on sending my credit cards to that address, and they want to keep that in sync. What we've found a lot of the times when working with customers is that they build their own master data management strategies. Often, in some cases, they'll use a single application as their single source of truth. And really what happens then is they have to model the customer based on the fields that that application may provide. So CRM, for instance, or maybe it's a custom application that they have. The whole concept of master data is that you model the data as you want it. So if I have a customer, I need to know their name, I need to know their address, I need to know their credit limit, I need to know a bunch of things. These are things which are important to my business and to the decisions that I need to make. And the examples of master data that we have and most organizations have is people, so the customer, who my customer is, what their name is, what their address is. The vendors that I have, the employees that I have, the partners, and any patients. And what becomes really interesting is that if I look at myself and Microsoft, I am an employee of Microsoft. I am a customer for Microsoft on several services as well. I may actually be a patient, in a sense. I may actually be logging a support case with Microsoft, so they may actually deal with me in that context as well. Keeping track of all of that information and doing versioning of all of those things over time is really, really complex. And yes, you can do it yourself, but really what you've then gone and done is you've actually built your own master data services. So what we see is that a lot of the build versus buy arguments that were present with BizTalk are actually the same with master data as well. So when we look at master data, it's not just the data problem, it's a process and a function problem. And what do we really mean by that? If we look at Syed, Syed was the marketing manager who originally asked me to work on MDS and BizTalk, so he lives on through these slides. So if we look here, System 1, System 2, System 3, System 4, we have a number of people called S. Rashid. Are they the same person? Are they related to each other? Do we need to have a record? If someone has a bad credit limit on System 1, do we need to pass that information on to System 2, System 3, System 4? The answer is, for most of the time, yes, right? That would be good. But that's something that's very, very hard to do. So when we look at why would you go and do this, here are some statistics that SQL Server asked a research company to go look at, in that how much does master data, what type of a problem does it cause, and actually quantify that for me. So when we look at a customer example, there's a 24% duplication rate. That's often the customer's problem as well. How many times have you logged onto a website and you can't remember the password that you used to use on it a long time ago, so you re-register with a different email address? Hands up if you've done that. I certainly know that I've done that in the past. So you've now caused a master data problem for that organization. Do you change your address every time you move address? Would you change it on all of the sites that you're registered on? I don't think so. I certainly don't. How much does this actually cost? If we think about it, if it costs 50 cents per customer to market to them as a 24% duplication rate, that means that we may be wasting over $1 million in total marketing budget, right? If we look at the customer's example continued, and we're trying to reach 1.4 million prospects, and we assume a 1% prospect rate. So when we need to invite 100 people to a conference in Microsoft, we assume a 1% prospect rate. Michael seems to do a much better job than this, so everyone answers his. So if we look at 14,000 potential new customers risk that we've missed, and we look at $983 lifetime revenue per customer, that's a lot of money, right? And I could go on and give you more and more examples of this, but I think that you get the picture, right? This is a key problem. And it's as businesses become more and more dependent on IT, and this is only going to continue, right, when we have more systems in the cloud, on-premise, etc., managing the master data becomes a real problem. So when we sum up the challenges, we think of it, what's my single trusted source of truth? If I want to send a mail shot to everybody to ask them to come to a conference, or I want to launch a new product, or I'm Panasonic and I want to launch a new TV, where do I send those mail shots to? How do I maintain the dimensions about the models that I create? What about if I have conflicting views of customer and product in different systems? How do I maintain the attributes that are applicable to a particular model? How do I deal when I have multiple stakeholders for the same record? So if System A wants to make a change to the customer model that they use, how do we manage that, and how do we have to cascade that change across the organization? And how do I enforce the data stewardship? So if someone wants to make a change to the credit limit, that could impact the overall organization, right? We only need to look at some of the troubles that we've had in this financial crisis to realize that people are going to make more of an effort to look at these things going forward. So really what SQL Server provide with Master Data Services is the data hub, which is built on SQL Server, the data platform itself, the stewardship portal, which is a site that you can use to manage it, and the actual process that you can do. Now, they've continued the trend that we've seen in a lot of Microsoft technologies where the platform has come first and then the tooling. So there are some intricacies with the tooling, you know, it takes a while to get used to, but the actual underlying platform is very solid. There is hierarchy support for multiple versions. Everything that is available from any of the tools is an API, is available over WCF. The team actually made the right decisions in this V1 release so that you can actually connect it to other systems. And what we actually found when we looked at that is that makes it very, very easy for us to connect to that using BizTalk server. And when we look at that scenario, we can actually then connect this single source of truth using the connectivity that BizTalk has built over the last 10 years to all of the heterogeneous systems in an environment, So now we can actually solve that issue, and we can connect the single source of truth to our SAP system, to Oracle, to Siebel, to SQL Server, etc. So integration points. There are two key integration points that we have for MDS. The first one is really for a real-time operation, and the second one is more for a batch notification. So if we think about if we want to deploy master data services in an environment, it really needs to come from the top down and have a lot of organizational support. In order to do that, we need to load a lot of data. You know, people may have 10,000, 100,000, 1 million plus customers, and we need to somehow put all of that data in. If we try and do it one at a time, that's going to cause us a real problem. So in order to do that, they have a batch operation support, which allows you to essentially insert into a set of tables and views which MDS provide, and you can actually insert all of the information in a specific format. So you can use SSIS to construct a package which will take information from the source and insert it so that it goes into MDS. Over time, though, we need to actually keep a track of the transactional master data changes. So that means if I change my address on my checking account, and my checking account is stored in a single SQL Server database, the organization will probably want to cascade that change across the rest of the organization. So in order to do that, MDS provides WCF endpoint, and the WCF service contract that they provide supports all of the operations that you can do through any of the tools and also through the bulk operations. So really, when we look at MDS, it's important to consider, are my requirements real-time or are they batch? Am I inserting a huge amount of data? I need to do a bulk load, like as a one-off when I need to first bring a system online into MDS? Or is it this more or less like a transactional change, like when a product price changes or when a customer changes address or those type of things? And really, over time, what that can mean is that BizTalk still maintains itself as the hub. And you know, all of you in the room should be familiar with this scenario. It's a typical EAI scenario that we've seen BizTalk in for almost 10 years now, where really we can leverage the connectivity that MDS has with WCF, and we can actually connect it using the BizTalk connectivity to all of these different systems. So already, even in the last 6 months, we've seen more and more interest in this specific scenario. So what I'm going to walk you through now then is a demo which really illustrates how we can use a Silverlight web application. We can use MDS to store our product and our customer information, and we can use BizTalk Server to connect the two. Now, obviously, this is a simple scenario, and in this case, you know, you would probably just, you know, call the WCF call directly from the order entry web application. But as many of you know, often integration isn't that simple, and we may want to, over time, in an organization, in a real scenario, we'd want to integrate with the inventory database. We may want to integrate with our 10 suppliers, so that if an order isn't immediately available on hand, we immediately go and place that order on the back-end system. So what's really going to happen here is that we're going to submit an order through the order entry web application. The order entry web application has no idea about the credit limit associated with the customer. That's not in its model of the customer that it has. But BizTalk is going to make a call to MDS and actually check that credit limit, and then it's going to actually return a response in the format that the order entry web application requires to determine whether that's successful or not. Okay, so the demo is built on Silverlight, and it uses WCF RIA services. This is something that myself and one of the guys from MDS team are working on. We will be documenting this in a white paper. So the scenario that you see here is on a server that we have in Redmond. So I've done a click through of this, and the paper should be out before the end of the calendar year. So on our Silverlight form, you can see we have customer one, and we actually want to place an order. And the total amount which is due is 1,833. And now we're clicking on another order, and the total due here is 6,525, and this status of this order is unsubmitted. We submit the order, and we get a response back the purchase order exceeds the credit limit for the customer. So what's actually happening in the background to enable this scenario? If we go look at the customer, and please remember that amount, 6,000 something. If we go look in the Explorer, which Master Data Services provides, so this is a tool that allows you to browse all of the models that you deploy. We click on Explorer, and we go to that customer, and we can see that the credit limit is actually set to 5,000. So behind the scenes, BizTalk has actually queried MDS using that WCF API, and has actually understood that the credit limit is 5,000, so now I can't actually accept that order. So in a real scenario, you can imagine, you know, the person who's operating the order system may ring up at the accounts department. I want you to make a change to the credit limit for this customer. They go through their stewardship process. They make the change. They say, yes, we've checked out this customer. They have no outstanding orders on any other systems. So we're now going to increase that credit limit, and that's now going to be 7,000. The person who's on the phone to the customer now tries to resubmit the order, and we can see that the purchase order was submitted successfully. So if we actually look at what's actually happening, you can see here, if we look at the code for the submit button, that we're actually calling a simple method, which under the covers is actually making a call to the BizTalk order entry service, which you can see here is constructing the response that we need, and it's actually calling that. So here we've got the order entry web application, which is calling an orchestration, which is exposed as a WCF endpoint. When we look in here, we can see, I'll just continue through, we're constructing the response, we're sending the order for approval, and we can actually see the order that we're actually sending. So the order looks something like this. So this is the schema which is generated. This is the XML message which is generated by our order entry application. This is the request that MDS provides. They have a very complex XML structure. This is a relatively simple one that they have. And really, they've made their API as flexible as possible so that it can handle multiple versions, different model names, all of those things, right? It can handle hierarchies, etc. So if you look through some of the fields, you'll see we have customer, and we have a model ID, we have a name, we have an internal ID. This is to handle all of the combinations. So this is not something that we'd want to construct by hand. We could use the BizTalk mapper to do this, but you know that would take us a lot of time. People, you know, doing a mapping should be a last resort when we really don't have some intelligent way to generate that specific message. Luckily, because both of these things are built on .NET, if we use the XML serialization option when we generate the proxy classes, we can actually use the MDS classes within orchestration and actually generate the responses that way. So what we've really done is we've taken this scenario where the MDS client application calls the MDS endpoint, which we've shown you how you would do, and we've really, typically we would do that from an application by adding a service client using add service reference in Visual Studio, which would generate the code for us, and instead of doing that, we're going to have the orchestration maintain that logic. Why, you ask, do we want to do this scenario? Well, we don't want to build in that MDS logic into each of our individual line of business applications, right? If we take that route, they're going to have to know about all of the customer versions, all of this internal stuff which MDS actually has. If we use BizTalk, which has complex mapping capabilities built in, the ability to take flat file format and translate them into XML, the ability to use the rules engine, all of these things which have been well developed over time, we can actually hide all of that information from our line of business applications. So we receive the request, we need to the original purchase order from the client application, and I need to actually construct the entity members get request. So we have simple helper class which does that. We take the attributes and we create the request, and then we take one of the promoted properties, which was the customer ID from the inbound message, and we actually put that into the get request which we use, which is the API call that we use for Master Data Services. So here BizTalk is actually calling the MDS endpoint, and we're using that to actually get information about the customer. We receive the response back here, and we receive the response back, which is an entity members get response. And now we need to actually take that information and construct an appropriate response for the order entry Silverlight application that we have. Of course, all of you using BizTalk are going, yeah, that's easy. But for a MDS, this is actually a core scenario, because now we can open up MDS to 10 different applications using Orchestration Engine, which is durable and robust and has been proven over time. So I use the helper class again to get the credit limit from the message. We look into the message, we return the response, and a couple of nested loops, and we can return an appropriate response to the actual end application. So you can see the status now equals get credit limit status, and we have some simple logic based on whether the value exceeds, if the order exceeds the credit limit for that particular customer. So what's really interesting in this scenario is that the actual inbound application had no knowledge of the backend systems that we were using or how we were making that decision based on the master data that the organization had. And this is really a scenario which we see more and more customers wanting to pursue. So we then use a map to actually construct the PO response and mapping those fields and using the status which we've already got from the response using the helper class, and we can actually put that and encapsulate that in the outbound message. And that's it. So I hope that kind of gives you an overview of MDS. And for those of you that are familiar with BizTalk, I hope it shows you how we can actually leverage some of these new capabilities that have been provided in SQL Server 2008 R2, and using existing BizTalk skills, which many of you in the room have, we can actually bring that and actually create new scenarios with it. Thank you. Yeah, so that's a good. So the question was, can I update MDS from other systems? Is that what you're saying? So I guess the easiest way, if I just go back. Slide that I have here. Boom. So this is really the slide that covers it all, right? So we have MDS and we have abilities to do the bulk load, which you would typically do by SSIS, and you also have MDS, the WCF endpoint, which you can call, right? You can call that, there are two choices. You can either call that from something like BizTalk Server or some other integration technology, or you can call it directly by encapsulating that logic in your line of business systems. So yes, you can update it from your line of business systems if they can understand and make a WCF call or, you know, web services call by exposing it over a binding such as WSHTTP. I guess the issue is if you're integrating with four or five different front-end systems, the scenario that we're going after and certainly we're looking at internally is why actually build that logic into these four or five different systems? Because it's not just the connectivity piece that I need to build in. I also need to build in all of the information about the model, right? Because think about a customer model and think about where we have customer model version 1, version 2, and version 3, right? All with different attributes that we've added over time, right? If you look at a risk management scenario, in order to have a risk management scenario, you may need to add different attributes to the model that you have. Well, our shipping system may only understand model 1 or some derivative of that, right? So if we build in the connectivity direct from this application up to MDS, that shipping system now needs to be aware that we're talking to MDS and we're talking to model 1 and it needs to do all of those calls, right? If we leverage BizTalk as a service bus, you know, integration layer, we can actually just send that shipping message like I sent the PO request. And that doesn't have any idea about the back-end model that you actually use. And really what that allows is it allows the scenario where we can actually model the customer how we want to model the customer and all the attributes that we need across the business. And we can suck in all that information from all of the different systems. Does that answer your question? Does anyone have any other questions? I know that this is like a new scenario and that many of you may not have seen it before, so I'm happy to take some time to answer any. So the way I would think about it is think of MDS as being another adapter, another endpoint that you're actually talking to, right? So if I go to this previous system, right? So when we look at MDS connectivity, we have two main integration points, right? We have the WCF endpoint, we have service broker queues, and we have staging and subscription views. Now, the WCF endpoint is just, we can connect, we're fortunate that BizTalk already has WCF connectivity support through the adapters that we shipped in R2, so we can connect to that anyway natively out of the box. In the same way, if you connect to SAP or if you connect to some other system, you can leverage all of the capabilities that, you know, BizTalk provides, like BAM, like the rules engine, all of those things. You can still do all of those things with MDS. It's just that you're connecting to a different system. And I think that what you'll see is that because WCF is kind of like the communication fabric that we see a lot of products for Microsoft, more and more of our technology will continue to use WCF. So what that means is that with technology such as Microsoft, which has native support for that, you can actually connect to that with as soon as the product ships and actually take advantage of all of the capabilities that the BizTalk platform provides. Does that answer your question? Any other questions? Yeah, so MDS is shipped with SQL Server 2008 R2 Enterprise Edition only. Yeah, it's a generic endpoint. So basically there are like 50 different message types which you have to define. So there is like entity members get request, entity members update request, all of those things. The API is very loosely typed. And really the reason why they made that decision was in order that it would cope with all of the scenarios that the product actually supported. So they paid the hard work this time in making the product very flexible and all of those things. The API is loosely typed, so you don't get, you remember, you know, like with BAM, where you don't get a nice strongly typed class generated for you, and you have to call all of the different, you know, start activity, etc., end activity. It's the same type of API as that, but the good thing is that it does support all of the operations. So the question was, is there another portal or tool that I can use in order than using the stewardship portal? So yes, so let's take it one thing at a time. Is the stewardship portal usable? Yes. Is it the most productive tool that we could have in 5 releases time? No. The team are aware of that, and that'll ongoing, as you see future releases of MDS, they'll continue to invest in that. Today, what can I do? If you don't want to use the portal, everything that's available in the portal is available over the API, so you could actually create your own web portal to manage it if you wanted, in a similar way that we've seen customers who have built their own portals for business activity monitoring with BizTalk. Okay, if there's no more questions, I'll hand over to Richard then. Thank you.